We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Wow is right. Happy Sunday morning, coming to live from the NovaCare broadcast booth. Rob Ellis in for Glenn Mack now, along with Ray Didinger in today's program. Brought to you by United Tire. Don't drive alone. Drive United. Visit UnitedTire.com. Ray, good to see you, my man. How about those two clips to get a set for the show today?
Pretty good. The Bryce Harper home run, and you and I were talking about before we went on the air. What a monster. I mean, I don't know if I can remember a Ryan Howard ball traveling that far.
That was my first thought. I'm going in the mental Rolodex trying to figure out, you know, anything Ryan Howard smoked over the years, and there were so many of them. But when you see them go over the batter's eye at Citizens Bank Park, you know, you'll get your fair share of cheapies here. That was far from cheap. And I'm quite frankly, Ray, I'm shocked it was only 466 feet. It felt like more than that. But the exit velocity was 114 miles per hour. I know you're a big exit velocity guy. You're all over that. But that is, even by those standards, but he swings so hard.
He does.
It's why he's so streaky, quite frankly.
That's why he's got 61 strikeouts.
But, man, when he connects.
He's got scary power, and we all know that. And that's why it always kind of, and look, I'm guilty of saying it too, is people say, well, if he comes to this ballpark, you know, a hitter like that in this ballpark is going to put up big numbers. Listen, with his kind of power, he doesn't hit a lot of cheap home runs.
No.
I mean, when he gets into a ball, it's going to get out of any ballpark. So small, you know, short fences, long fences, it really doesn't matter with that kind of power. Obviously, that kind of ball might have gone out at the old Polo Grounds. I mean, that was a prodigious shot. And I think what you're seeing, the night before, he looked pretty good. Looked like he was coming out of it a little bit. He had a big double in that game. And Gabe Kapler said, you know, we see him coming out of this. He's, you know, he's really close to breaking out of this, was what he said the night before. And then yesterday was certainly the evidence of it. That first at-bat was pretty memorable.
Yeah, baby steps here. But last four games, he's hitting .333. He's 5-15. He had the home run that we just referenced. And he's also got three doubles, right? So considering where it was, you're seeing some progress, I think, here. And I think, you know, the thing that I don't think it's taken to account enough is he did miss a good chunk of spring training.
Exactly.
And we sort of, because he started off pretty well in those opening two series.
You figured it didn't matter.
Yeah, this is Bryce Harper. He doesn't need spring training. Well, right. Maybe he's showing that he's human. I think it's a combination of, I think it's threefold, really. I think missing spring training, pressing a little bit, which is only human nature when you sign that kind of deal, and an unprecedented deal at that time.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that traditionally he's incredibly streaky. I mean, that's who he is.
Yep.
There's no surprise there that he's an incredibly streaky guy. So
that's him.
You're talking about, you know, add those three factors into it, and that's how you start the season off at .230 with 8 home runs and 28 RBIs. But what I keep pointing out, and I said this yesterday when I was sitting in for Howard, I'm of the camp. There's the panicky camp, and then there's the he's going to be okay camp. I'm in the he's going to be okay camp.
Right.
This is sort of who he is. He's also impacting you in so many other ways. He's impacting games in the field. He's been a phenomenal right fielder.
Yeah, he's played really well defensively.
I mean, game-saving, big inning-saving, stopping the bleeding, saving catches. He's shown the kind of arm that he has. He's played very well in right field. He's walking a ton, which is allowing Rhys Hoskins and the guys below him in the order to drive runs in. Mm-hmm. So while the average, none of us are thrilled with 230 and 61 strikeouts is scary, there's a lot of other ways that he's helping you win ball games.
Yeah, for sure. And I, you know, he's running the bases hard, making things happen, scoring runs. He's on base a lot. And I mean, you just said it, and I've been saying it now for a couple of weeks. Look, this is what he is. This is who he is. It's been that way through his career. I mean, you look at last year. I mean, the numbers that he had through May of last year in Washington were not that dissimilar from what he had this year. I mean, he started slow and then got on a tear and then finished up. And at the end of the year, he's always going to be mid-30s home runs and, you know, 100 or so RBIs. And that's kind of – he's going to get there. You know, it's sort of like I remember an old Gene Mockism from back in the day when Dick Allen got off to a slow start one year. And I forget if he was hitting, you know, 220 or something right around this time. And Gene Mock said, yeah, but think about all the fun he's going to have getting up to 290 because that's what he is. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the year, he's going to be that kind of hitter. So, okay, he's going to get from where he is now to that. And, boy, isn't that going to be a fun ride.
Absolutely.
And I kind of felt the same way about Harper. And I think we're now, in the last couple of days, you're starting to see him come out of it a little bit.
Yeah, and not lost, certainly, you know, as we sit here and look at it, what right now is a beautiful day at Citizens Bank Park as the grounds crew prepares the field. Not lost in the Harper home run is Aaron Nola, who, with the exception of his previous outing, Ray, also looks like he's coming into form here, looking more and more like the Aaron Nola we saw in 2017. He goes six innings, allows just one run yesterday, and you and I were talking about this before the show. You, from the first inning, you said to yourself, "Oh, okay, it's going to be an Aaron Nola day today."
Yeah, geez, I mean, three strikeouts and three called third strikes. I mean, you don't see that in Major League Baseball all that much. I mean, in a league that's dominated by strikeouts now, you don't often see three strikeouts in one inning, everybody looking, and they were. And that's, you know, he was just totally on top of it right from the get-go. His location was great. He had that late movement on his fastball and was working both sides of the plate. And, you know, when he's feeling it and when he's in a rhythm and he's working fast and he's around the plate, mixing up his pitches, man, he's a dominant pitcher. I mean, we saw it all last year. I mean, he was in the running for Cy Young pretty much all year. So far this year, he had given you a glimpse or two, but on the whole, I think he would tell you that he's been disappointed in the way he's pitched. But, boy, that was vintage Aaron Nola yesterday.
Yeah, no question. And I think most importantly, Ray, after what was really an ugly series against Milwaukee here, they found themselves a little bit in the first two and go for the sweep today against the Rockies. I mean, that most importantly, they needed to get up off the mat because you don't want that to turn into just this big-time skid, and they didn't do that.
No, and they didn't just lose to Milwaukee. They got beat up
by
Milwaukee.
Yeah.
You know, Kapler, I thought the other day, I mean, he's normally a glass half full guy.
Mm-hmm. That's an understatement.
Overflowing. Yeah, I mean, in the worst of times, he's usually there telling you how everything's fine, don't worry. But after the Milwaukee series, I mean, I thought that he came out and said, hey, you know, we got to be better than this.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he's right because, you know, coming into this series, Colorado's no joke. They're a pretty good team, pretty good lineup. And then you look beyond that where you go at the end of this homestand. You go to Chicago, you got to play the Cubs. Then you got to go to Milwaukee and play the Brewers again.
You got the Dodgers looming, too.
And then you come home for three against the Cardinals, who are a good team, who are playing for something. Then you got to pack up and go to the West Coast to play the Dodgers and the Padres. So they're going through a stretch now over the next couple of weeks where, I mean, they're going to be really challenged. And they needed, after the Milwaukee series, they needed to make things right to take on that stretch. And, you know, I think in the last 2 days you're seeing signs they're doing that.
Yeah, and I would say all in all, if you assess what we've seen so far from this team, they played pretty good baseball. Certainly there's been some gut-wrenching losses, and there have been guys who have, you know, maybe underachieved or gotten off the slow starts or whatever, but pretty good. I mean, they've been the beneficiary of a division that or at least in the early going, couldn't get out of its own way in a lot of ways, too. But whatever. I mean, you've taken care of business. You've done a good job against the NL East. And right now you sit in first place. And so far, so good. You get a sweep here. Confidence starts to build. You get Jared Eichhoff on the mound, who, with the exception of maybe his last outing, has pitched very well for you this season. Mm-hmm. And so that's a good sign. I think you got, even though they didn't score a ton of runs yesterday, they played crisper baseball for the most part.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things that's, I was talking to Ricky Pitalico the other day, and we were talking about this. And, you know, they're in first place, so there's that. I think people are a little disappointed, but they've had some bad stretches, they've played some bad baseball. But, you know, say, hey, we're in first place. True. The one thing that bothers me is, coming into this year, I really thought the NL East was going to be a good division. I really thought, we knew Miami was going to be Miami. They weren't going to be a factor. But I thought the other four teams were going to be really good. To this point, they haven't been. You know, and if the Phillies had come out hot at the start of the year, I mean, the Phillies right now could be sitting where Houston is sitting. Mm-hmm. Where you kind of buried the rest of the division almost. And they haven't. They're in first place, but everybody's kind of still close enough. You know, you had this opportunity in this first quarter of the season to really give yourself a nice cushion over the rest of the division. And even though you're in first place, you didn't quite do that. But I still feel and who knows where the season's going to go. But I felt at the beginning of this year this is going to be a playoff team, and I still think they're going to be a playoff team.
Absolutely. So we'll talk a lot of Phillies today, no question. The Harper home run was just something to behold. Aaron Nola pitching well and bouncing back after what was a really ugly series against the Brewers, against the Rockies, go for the sweep today. Ray, I didn't think we'd be talking a lot about the Eagles' defensive line. We're always going to talk Eagles. But yesterday, and this is very much kind of a 2019 thing, Chris Long tweets out a picture of himself holding up a red Solo cup, essentially saying, you know, cheers to what was an 11-year career, and thanks to everybody who helped, you know, pick me up in the process here, which was typical of Chris Long, just done in kind of a cool, classy way. Mm-hmm. But calling it into a career, and really there was a lot of speculation this offseason what was going to happen. His role was going to be reduced. He didn't want to come back and go through the rigors of what it took if that role was going to be reduced. But we got a definitive answer now that Chris Long will not be coming back. And Ray, I'm not sure I can remember a guy who's had the kind of impact on and off the field in just 2 years here, and it seems like he's been here a lot longer, but that's all it's been, 2017 and 2018 seasons, than Chris Long had.
Yeah, that's the remarkable thing about it. I mean, the impact that he had in just two seasons, it was amazing. You know, when the Eagles signed him, I thought, oh, that's a good signing. You know, he's a veteran player, had just come from winning a Super Bowl in New England. You know, you'll be able to find snaps for him. He'll help you. Well, he was a lot more impactful than I envisioned him being. You know, I kind of really, really thought he was at the end of the line when the Eagles got him. And, you know, maybe they'll get a few snaps out of him and he can contribute a little bit. But he played a lot more, and he played a lot better than I thought he was going to. And it's now a matter of everybody understands what a force he was in the locker room and around the team, what a leader he was, the way that his teammates looked up to him, and the way he had an ability to rally the troops both on the field and off the field. And, you know, when you look back on his 2 years here, a lot of big plays.
Oh, I mean, we just played one off the top of the show. Patrick Robinson is going to get all the love for what was a great interception return, don't get me wrong.
And totally flipped that game around.
Big time. People forget about that because the Eagles went on to roll. That game was a lot. It was real tight and looked real kind of shaky at that point.
Yeah, they're down 7-0 in that game.
But Chris Long is the one who really makes the play with the pressure on Keenum right there, and then the rest is history. I mean, it is just an avalanche of Eagles after that. But that was Chris Long making that play.
Yeah, there's some guys that there are points in games where you say, boy, this is a big series, or this is a big down. This is a big third down. You need a big play here. You need to get off the field. Or, boy, wouldn't it be great to get a turnover right here? And those are the plays that Chris Long made. You know, I mean, you look at his statistics, and they're good. But what they don't tell you is how impactful those plays were, how impactful those sacks were, how impactful those quarterback hits and pressures were. They always came at critical moments. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at games and there's more than 100 snaps in a game. It might be 120, 130 snaps in a game. But generally the game is decided by half a dozen of them, you know. And it's the teams that win those critical plays that win the game. And there are certain guys that's when they make their presence felt.
And that was him.
And that was Chris. I mean, in those situations when you needed the big pressure, when you needed the big sack, when you needed the big hit, he had the ability to do that. And so I was kind of, you know, I was of two minds with it. I thought that it was 80% likely he was probably not going to come back. I was hoping that he would.
I wanted him back in a big way.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that it would get closer and he would have this, you know, maybe one more year. Mm-hmm. But if you had asked me, and a lot of callers were asking over the last couple of weeks, what'd you think? I said, I really don't expect him back. I was hoping he would come back, but I'm really not expecting him back. So I wasn't surprised by the news yesterday, but yeah, I was certainly disappointed.
Yeah, I'm with you. I almost feel guilty saying disappointed because the guy went out on his own terms.
Sure.
And he had a great impact here and brought the city its first Super Bowl, helped bring the city its first Super Bowl, and couldn't have handled himself better. But I was a little disappointed because he's still productive. I mean, you talk about Ray in his two seasons here in a rotation, not right as your every down defensive end. 11.5 sacks and 6 forced fumbles. That's impactful minutes and impactful snaps, just going to your point.
Right.
But you look back, the fact that he played an entire season for free, essentially, donating his entire salary to various, educational beneficiaries.
Right.
what he's done for his Water Boys initiative, where he's getting clean water to East African nations. I mean, just the it's incredible. I mean, you talk about the ultimate, and not to mention a lot of other things that he did in the city, and he just got us. Like, I think he had the Iverson jersey on during the parade with the mink coat, and just he got Philadelphia. And I think a lot of it was probably imparted into him by his dad, who played here at Villanova.
By Howie, sure.
Certainly by Howie, but... You know, it was a perfect marriage for 2 years with this guy. And that's one of the things we could throw out there today, just short stints that had this kind of impact. I'm not sure you're going to be able to rival this on and off the field. Helped bring a Super Bowl and did as much as he did for people in general off the field.
Yeah, and I think that was part of it, Rob. I think that, Chris's life now is sort of taking him in a lot of different directions. And not that football wasn't still important to him. It was, obviously. It's something that, I mean, it's the family business. I mean, he grew up in it. His father was a great player. His father's still involved. But, you know, Chris certainly sees the bigger world. I mean, he sees all the things that are out there. And, I mean, you just listed some of them, the things that he's involved with. And I think he just felt like that's important. It's important. If I'm going to be committed to this, I want to be fully committed to this. And so that's part of it, too, is he felt like it was time for him to move on in his life and do other things. And, hey, Godspeed, you know. I'm sure he's going to be successful in whatever it is he takes on because he's that kind of person. But his two seasons in Philadelphia playing for the Eagles, for two seasons, he left quite a legacy.
Yeah, Walter Payton, Man of the Year, which tells you all you need to know right there with Chris Long. And I'll be honest, Ray, from a sort of selfish, petty, just looking at it from a football standpoint, I'm not in love with their defensive end situation. And that's one of the other reasons why this was, noteworthy. They need help there at that spot. And they're going to have to be some young guys, namely Derek Barnett, but some young guys who really need to step up if they are going to have the kind of success they need to have with the way that they go about things under Jim Schwartz with, just your front four needs to get home.
Yeah, there's a lot riding on Derek Barnett. I mean, he's coming back from the injury, and if you talk to the people down at NovaCare, you talk to the coaches, the trainers, they're all very optimistic. Physically, he's going to be fine. They expect him to have a big year. Well, he better. He's a first-round pick that showed a lot of promises rookie year, and then got hurt last year, and you lost him. But when he comes back, he's got to come back and play like a first-round draft pick. Because right now at that position, I mean, they've got players, but they need impact players. And they really need Derek Barnett to take that big step up this season.
Yeah, so we'll talk a lot about Chris Long, a lot about the certainly Eagles defensive line situation, and as well as the Phillies, because the Phillies have gotten this thing going. We'll certainly mix in some Sixers. I don't know about you guys, Ray, yesterday, you and John, but I talked a lot of Sixers yesterday and just kind of where things are with this team, because it was a week ago today. It seems like a lot longer than that. But Kawhi Leonard hits the four doink shot that goes in that has left some people still staggering a little bit in the Delaware Valley. And what a critical offseason this is. Not 3/5 of your starting five are free agents, number one. At number two, your two young guys who are your foundational pieces, this is a very critical offseason for them as well to do the right things, to put in the kind of work that you need to put in to build on what's already started here.
Yeah, it's true.
In a big way. So we can talk some Sixers as well. We're coming to you from the NovaCare broadcast booth at Citizens Bank Park. We got Phillies-Rockies 1 o'clock. I think people tend to forget that sometimes because it was so ingrained in us for such a long time that everything was 1:35 on Sunday afternoon. 1 o'clock start here today. I'll get people set a little bit later with leading off, but Ray and I have you until noon. 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon. So, Ray, we also had a jockeyless horse run yesterday in the preseason.
I saw that.
Which is the bizarreness of this Triple Crown pursuit has gotten epic levels. That's for sure. 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Ray Didinger, Rob Ellis, I'm in for Glenn today, and I'm glad that Glenn didn't have to get the full reconstruction. So that's a good sign.
Just a little minor repair, as it turns out.
Wishing him all the best in his recovery. I think he's recovering pretty well. I'm sure he's watching his shows.
He's cranky as ever.
Exactly right. All right, so we're coming to you live from the NovaCare broadcast booth. We'll come back. Your phone calls, 888-729-9494. Rob Ellis, Ray Didinger, WIP Sports Time is 10:20. Nothing better than a beautiful day at the ballpark, and I get to sit next to Ray Didinger. I am Rob Ellis in for Glenn Mack now today with the NovaCare booth in Citizens Bank Park, hanging out with you, 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Talk a little Chris Long, a little Phillies, mixed in some Sixers as well to kick the show off today. And, Ray, you know, you think about, you have the voluntary OTAs coming up this week.
This week.
Yeah, and there's some speculation. I talked to Howard about this yesterday, who I was sitting in for, that Malcolm Jenkins may not be showing up. He's, I think, you know, possibly not real thrilled about his contract situation. He's got 2 years left on his deal.
Right.
He may not be in. You think about how integral he was to that team last year, the fact that he never missed a snap. He also plays on special teams. But he is an older player.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think by the time the season starts, there'll be a new deal in place for Malcolm? I think this is a tough one.
Yeah, I do. Your first impulse is to say, well, of course. I mean, he's that valuable a player. Of course you're going to do that. But then you look at his age, and
There's some wear on that tire, too.
Yeah, yeah. Now, he has been throughout his career among many good attributes. One of them is durability.
Amen.
I mean, he is tough, boy. I mean, he just plays. He doesn't just play every game. He plays pretty much every snap of every game. Mm-hmm. And with great versatility. That was the reason why when the Eagles went on that offseason free agent search at the safety position, he was the guy that I immediately identified. And I said, no, this is the guy I want. I mean, there were a lot of other people that were talked about, you know, Bird. I mean, there were a lot of guys were talked about. And I said, no, I honestly would take Jenkins. Even though the rating systems had the other guys rated higher, none of those guys had the versatility that Jenkins did. And, I mean, people forget that when he came out of Ohio State, he was a cornerback.
Right.
He was drafted as a cornerback mm-hmm. and then converted to safety, but he still has cornerback skills. So whatever situation you need him to play within a game, if a team goes to a total spread formation and you need him to lock up on somebody and play man-to-man, he can do that where a lot of safeties can't. And listen, he's come in here and he's been everything that I thought he was going to be, and then some.
Yeah, another player who has really, you know, beyond the field too.
Yep.
In terms of what he's looked to do, I'd say he's in the top five, top seven all time free agent signings for the Eagles.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I mean, you talk about the best free agent signings you've got. I mean, you would certainly. You certainly talk about Troy Vincent.
Vincent Runyon.
Runyon was
Ricky Waters was, for the time he was here, Ray, was short and sweet, but he had some monster numbers he put up here.
He led the league in carries 1 year. I mean, he had two of his 3 years, he had over 330 rushing attempts. That's a lot.
Well, that's why, not to get sidetracked here, Ricky Waters, if you look at his numbers, you can make a real strong case for the Hall of Fame. He never gets talked about. But his time here in terms of pass catching ability and running ability, man, he played extremely well when he was here.
Yeah, it's Ricky's career is a funny career. I mean, if you just look at it in terms of the numbers, you're right. I mean, you could make a real case for the Hall of Fame. I mean, he had three very productive stays. I mean, he had a very productive stay in San Francisco, obviously, where
sure.
he helped them win a Super Bowl. And, by the way, he had a monster Super Bowl.
He did.
A monster Super Bowl. Then he comes here and has three really good years with the Eagles, where he's a heavy-duty back and leads the league in all-purpose yardage. And then he goes on to Seattle. People forget about the Seattle years, but he played well out there, too. So, at the bottom lining, Ricky Waters' career, I mean, you put that down on paper, and someone would say, wow, I mean, you can make a case for the Hall of Fame. Now, I haven't sensed among the Hall of Fame voters that there's a whole lot of enthusiasm for him.
Very little buzz.
Very, very little. I mean, when you consider, you know, when you consider a guy like Roger Craig is not in the Hall of Fame, you know, Ricky Waters was a similar type of player to Roger Craig, I would say. And, you know, Roger Craig has never gotten in the Hall of Fame, and I doubt that Ricky will either. I don't even think Ricky's been in the final 15, but his numbers are certainly way up there.
Absolutely. But bottom line it for Malcolm, do you think there's a new deal in place when he comes back? Or when the season starts, I would guess, knowing him, he'll be in when it's mandatory. But when it's not, you can send a little message. And I don't have any question the kind of shape the guy's going to be in it or his preparedness. So I don't worry about him not being at OTAs. But
yeah.
Do you think there will be a new deal in place?
I think they'll work something out. Okay. I do. I know there's been a lot of conversation, and I know there was some conversation that you were having with Howard yesterday.
Yeah.
About the Carson Wentz situation and the idea of getting his contract worked out. I don't understand the urgency. I mean, I know it's a big topic of conversation, people saying they're going to get this done. No, they don't have to get it done. I mean, there's ample time to do this. I mean, I think it's more likely that Carson's deal will be done sometime this year, but I think it's more likely it's going to get done during the season than before the season. There's no rush.
You think, is your sense, get back in there, let's see 6-8 games where you look like 2017 pre-knee injury against the Rams, Carson, and then, all right, look, let's try to get this done before we get any deeper into this thing, and you know we're going to be paying even more out the rear end here once the season ends.
Right.
If he stays healthy for the whole year. That's your sense? Somewhere around there?
Yeah, and I don't think...
I know there's a deadline during the season, so you have to get it done by.
Yeah, but I kind of think that's where it's going to... I kind of think it's where it's going to happen, and... You know, I don't think anybody should ever question, is this an indication that the team is less committed to him long term?
No, Howie's made that very clear.
And sometimes general managers say things and only mean half of it. No, this team is as fully committed to Carson Wentz as they've ever been, and they should be. I mean, they've got more riding on him now than ever, now that Nick Foles is gone.
Well, there's no more net, Ray. I mean, you had the luxury in an NFL where there's very few times that you have a backup quarterback that can actually step in there and win you games for an extended period of time. Nothing against Nate Sudfeld. We just don't know what he is, but that's gone. So there's no net. This is it. He's got to stay
Don't forget Cody Kessler.
I forgot your guy out of USC, Cody Kessler, now in the house. And don't forget Clayton Thorson either, Ray, since we're not forgetting anybody.
I will tell you this about Clayton. I know there's going to be very little conversation about Clayton Thorson, the rookie quarterback Northwestern.
He was great in Gilligan's Island, by the way. He was probably my favorite character, along with Lovey.
Well, I will tell you, he's pretty good. He is pretty good. I mean, he took Northwestern to bowl games 4 straight years.
He's a tough kid, too.
He is. He's got size. He's got a good arm. He's smart. Throws a little too many interceptions, but sometimes that's just the result of trying too hard. Mm-hmm. But he's got some ability. I think when he gets – and you'll probably get to see a ton of him in the preseason because I don't think Wentz is going to play much.
You'll get the Matt McGloin treatment, right?
Yeah.
He's getting a lot of reps.
So you'll get to see him a lot in the preseason, and I have a feeling you're going to like what you see.
Okay. All right, let's kick off the phone lines. Andrew wants to talk a little Sixers and Joel Embiid. What's going on, Andrew?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to ask your thoughts on Joel Embiid playing outside the three-point line, you know, at Steph Curry land in a key Game 7 versus the Raptors. And, you know, do you guys think it was defense that kept him out here? Or how is he not being told to play down low? It just kills me.
It's too much. He's out there too much. There's a couple of byproducts of it. I mean, there are a couple of reasons why that I think it happens. One, when you're not in the greatest of shape and it's the end of the game and you've been banging around the whole time and you're a little tired, you don't want to go down there with Marc Gasol and have to hammer it out with a big body. It's a lot easier to stay out there and not have to deal with the contact up at the three-point line, number one. Number two, I agree with you that Brett Brown has to say to him, get your rear end down there. But I think part of this also is there's no fear on the perimeter with Ben. Therefore, there's an extra body pretty much down there packing it in the lane, which makes it even more difficult to get an entry pass into him. But it's too much. I don't mind him stretching it out every once in a while, 3 times a game, whatever the case may be. But he falls too much in love with it. It's kind of like I make this comparison a lot. When Jimmy Rollins would hit a home run in the first inning to lead off the game, you thought to yourself, Jimmy's going for the fences today,
my man. He's
swinging
for the fences every at-bat.
Joel Embiid knocks one down early. You know Joel's going to be launching probably more threes than you would like.
I agree. Thanks, guys.
Okay, Andrew, you got it, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, Ray, those 3 sets, we're gonna look back and remember Kawhi Leonard's shot, of course.
Of course. But still trying to figure out how that went in.
Me too.
Have you ever seen a ball hit that part of the rim and do what that ball did?
No, I've never seen literally four times it hits the tin and then it goes through. But it just tells you, A, he got a lot of loft on it, which you need. He's got good rotation on the ball, unlike Ben Simmons. That's why a shot like that's going to fall. If you're shooting a line drive that comes off your hand like a curveball, you're not going to get any kind of rolls on a rim. But that's what Kawhi does. No, I've never seen that. But the problem is the 3 possessions that were just beyond horrendous leading up to that from the Sixers in that fourth quarter, which was ultimately their downfall.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was Embiid's up at the perimeter, and Jimmy Butler's just kind of trying to ad-lib things and get anything going, and they end up either – it's a shot clock violation or they just launch some garbage.
Or they wind up with a bad shot.
That was the killer, man. That did them in that game.
They really had a chance. They had a lead in the fourth quarter, and they had a couple of possessions where they really could have put Toronto in a bad spot, and they squandered them.
Yeah.
They did. I mean, they had the series when it was 2-1. That game in Philadelphia, the 2-1 game in Philadelphia, was really their chance to lock it down. And they let that get
Sunday.
Away.
That Sunday
they let
game.
That one get away, and then it gets to 2-2, and then you got another shot in Game 7. And I really did think even though we all know it's tough to win a game 7 on the road in the NBA playoffs. We all know that. But I really felt like they had a good chance in that game because Toronto's history is not to win those spots. And you knew there was going to be more pressure on them than the Sixers. And there were a lot of things there that made me think that the Sixers had a really good chance in that game, and they did. And the fact that they actually were leading in the fourth quarter with the ball, they really that's what's really got to kill you. If you're the Sixers, you're looking back on that and you're saying, you know, people are going to say, oh, you fought hard. And, yeah, you did. But it's got to kill you to know that you really – I mean, you really probably should have won that game.
Oh, no, there were a few of those. I mean, certainly the game that you talked about, that game 4 and then game 7, no doubt about it. I mean, yeah, I give them credit. They fought back. They game 6 here was exciting, and they were right in that game. But, you know, ultimately, I think what we've seen as the playoffs have advanced here are a guy like Giannis – even a guy like Kawhi with his team down 0-2 right now heading into game 3 today back in Toronto. When the chips are down, when you need them at their most, those guys deliver. And I think that's part of the maturation process of Embiid and Simmons, whereas they tend in playoff games, in big games, I don't mean regular season where they can dominate. In these big games, they have tended to sort of not be there, not be the presence that they needed to be.
Correct.
At times. And you saw it really in that Toronto series where it was magnified. Do
you think Toronto makes this a series, or do you think it's over?
I think they win today. Here's what you're really seeing here in that series. Milwaukee has unbelievable depth. They're getting, as great as Giannis is, and he's great, they're getting contributions all over the place. Lopez and Brogdon and Middleton. I mean, across the board, Mirotic. With Toronto, and this was the same way really in the Sixers series.
Absolutely.
It is a one-man band
trying
to carry them to victory. And that's another thing that should make you frustrated if you're a Sixers fan. They essentially beat you with one guy. They really did. I mean, there were a couple games where maybe Lowry woke up a little bit here and there or somebody else. But ultimately, they're really, other than Siakam, who had a couple of good but not great games, nobody else stepped up for Toronto, and you lost to them.
Yeah.
With one guy.
Yeah. Siakam got banged up, and I don't think he ever looked like he was fully 100% after that.
Yeah.
But once they got to that point, yeah, I mean, you were playing against one guy, and one guy basically beat you.
Yeah, you couldn't stop him, for sure. Let's go to Jimmy in New Jersey. Wants to talk some Bryce Harper. Jimmy, you're on with Ray and Rob. What's up, Jim?
Good morning, gentlemen. Let me start off by saying I wish Glenn a speedy recovery from the surgery.
We're hoping that he's going to be back next week.
Yeah, he's hopeful to be back next week.
I guarantee you he's listening. So
yes.
So
nice.
I'm sure he appreciates your good thoughts.
No problem. And I just all the radio I listen to, I'm in the car pretty much 10 hours a day, and all the radio I listen to on you guys, it's the first, you guys together was the first I've heard of Bryce Harper and the fact that he missed spring training. It's the first time, and I mean, like, I was against him, you know, it taking so long to sign, but when he did, I was ecstatic, and there has to be, I mean, he is human, like you guys said, he's human, and I just don't get, you know, how that nobody got that, you know, until now, till today, the first time I've heard it.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been bringing it up when I've, you know, been on, but I think it's something that is overlooked, and I think that we just assume because he's Bryce Harper that everything's going to be fine, and he's going to be able to get through everything, but guess what? You know, you're going against the best in the world, and eventually, yeah, he started off hot, but I think it catches up to you. I think I really do, Jim. I think there's a couple of factors involved. I think it's that. I think it's the fact that he's trying to show he's worth that contract, and he may not say it. The Phillies may downplay it or whatever, but I think that's a piece of this thing. And
yeah.
And typically, even with a full spring training, he's a streaky player. He just
yeah,
is.
Absolutely.
We're
going
to have to live with it. It's up and down.
Yes, absolutely. And, Ray, I wanted to ask you, Ray, last week I had dropped off some cheesecakes
Glenn, oh, yes.
That you guys, you know, you liked them stuff. I thought you were getting out of the studio, so I didn't. I was ecstatic that you were getting it. You know, I'm a huge fan of yours, and to have you have tried it, and he said you agreed with him, and how, you know, that it was really good.
It was really good. I appreciate you making the effort to drop them off. And Glenn last week announced that his food hunt this year is chocolate.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And so this gentleman came down before we even got off the air and brought down some chocolate cheesecake.
Jimmy, my man.
Yeah.
So it was good work.
It was very, very good. We both really enjoyed.
So which one? You like the chocolate one more? Yeah, okay. That's what I was saying.
Yes.
I'd ask Glenn the same thing. If he liked the banana or the chocolate, he kind of said he went with that chocolate one.
Yeah, we liked them both, but if we had to choose one, the chocolate cheesecake was really good.
Jimmy, good stuff. Nice. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
No problem at all. I'm looking forward to Glenn said you know, he'll be reaching out to me to go, you know, possibly go into this.
I hope so.
All right.
I hope so.
Jimmy, thanks, man.
No problem at all. You guys have a great day.
All right,
you too, Jim.
You got it. 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. So you partook. You enjoyed, huh?
Yeah. Glenn announced that that's going to be this year's food hunt is going to be chocolate, which is going to be a challenge considering the competition is going to be in July. So we're liable to have a little meltdown there. We're hoping that the area at Delaware Park where we're going to be doing it is air conditioned, I hope. But he said it's going to be a chocolate thing. It's going to be all forms of chocolate. And so this gentleman, they make cheesecakes, and they make a very fine chocolate cheesecake. So he jumped in the car and drove some down to the studio and left them with Steve McFadden, the producer. So we came out to
Steve didn't down it all himself. He actually saved some for
as
you.
As I recall, Steve, you passed on it, didn't you?
Oh, okay.
I think, Steve, yeah, you did, right?
I passed.
Yeah, I offered, because we had a couple extra, and you passed on it.
Wow.
But I'll tell you, you missed out. They were good.
They look good.
Big fan. 888-729-9494. Let's get a quick timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue the discussion about Bryce Harper, about the Sixers, about Chris Long. Chris Long, and again, impact in 2 years both on the field and off. Can you tell me someone who's had a bigger impact than Chris Long has here in the Delaware Valley and beyond, for sure? Rob Ellis, in for Glenn Mack now, along with Ray Dinger, company live from the NovaCare broadcast booth, Citizens Bank Park. WIP Sports Time is 10:43. 10:49. Welcome back, everybody. Rob Ellis, Ray Dinger. We're coming to you live from the NovaCare broadcast booth. Ray, I know later this afternoon we're going to get some showers, but you look out right now, man. Is there any better view than a ballpark?
Nope.
If you're a sports fan, I think in general, even if you're not, coming to Citizens Bank Park on a day like this and just walking out into the concourse and looking out at the field, what a feeling that is.
It's beautiful.
This
really is a beautiful ballpark. I've been to some of the new ones. I have not been to the new ballpark in San Francisco, which I heard is quite
I want to
nice.
Get to Pittsburgh. I haven't been to
Pittsburgh's
yet.
Really good.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh is really, really good. It's a lot like this. Actually, it's a lot like this ballpark. The advantage that it has is it is right in downtown, and you have the full view of the skyline of Pittsburgh beyond. And it's right there in the middle of the three bridges.
Clemente Bridge is the one you walk over to get to the ballpark.
It's a shame. I mean, there's nobody there. I mean,
right.
The stadium's empty. I was out there to do something on the Steelers a few years ago. The stadium was still fairly new then. And just figured, I don't have anything to do tonight. I'll just go over to the ballpark. I mean, you walk up to the box office 5 minutes before the first pitch, and you can pick any seat you want.
You're actually playing right field if you do that.
It is empty, which is a shame. But if you want to see a nice ballpark, it's not all that far. If you're one of these people that take summer vacations and you drive across America, it wouldn't be a bad one to swing through Pittsburgh and catch a baseball game there, because it's really terrific. And then your next stop should be in Canton, Ohio. Go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Oh,
that's worth a visit, too.
You cannot go wrong that way. That's for sure. I still love going down to Camden Yards. I mean, it was really the original of sort of the retro,
yes,
new age,
yes,
you know, bringing these ballparks back, which was, God, I mean, that's been open since early 90s.
Long time.
So, but it's there's still something special about that as well. And you got the Inner Harbor right there, which is, you know, everything's kind of walkable from Camden Yards too, which is really, really cool. But
gorgeous. And they borrowed a lot of the, you know, you're right about Camden Yards kind of changed the way people were thinking about ballparks, and they went retro and they went to, you know, sort of old look ballparks but with modern amenities, which was really a smart way to go. And Camden Yards showed that it could work, and Camden Yards proved that the ballpark could be the destination. The team doesn't necessarily have to be great for people to come to the ballpark and have a good time. Camden Yards proved that, and then all of a sudden everybody wanted their own Camden Yards, and they've got the one here. And they've copied it in many ways. It's very similar to that, right down to one of the great perks of Camden Yards is Boog Pal's Barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
So when they built Citizens Bank Park, they decided we want to have our own version of that. And what better way to go than the Bulls Barbecue.
So. I'll tell you, too, like, there are – even this year, they've added so many amenities to this place, in, you know, in terms of places to eat, drink, whatever. I'm almost – though I walk in, I'm, like, overwhelmed. Like, I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
You know, really, you start – you walk around this ballpark, and then Ashburn Alley, obviously, is sort of the mecca of it. But there are so many different options for you if you're hungry. I'm getting hungry right now even thinking about it, right, as a matter of fact. We might have to – and I'm pulling a Glendale. I'm actually openly campaigning for food to come in.
Well, there you go.
As a matter of fact. But Phillies today go for the sweep. against the Rockies team that had come in really, really hot. If you remember when the Phillies played them, since then they have been really playing good baseball, and it's a dangerous lineup. And Aaron Nola yesterday, and this is what you could really start to get encouraged about, that he looks like he's finding himself now, the warmer weather, which we talked about a little bit earlier. But, you know, to be able to handle a lineup like that the way that he did, and by the way, credit to the bullpen too.
I was just going to say Neris was really good.
Really good. And that's, you know, obviously when you're facing a lineup like that, for that bullpen to come in here, and Neris, you know, he's been, dare I say it, Ray, pretty dependable.
He has been.
Hold up? I don't know, but he's been pretty dependable.
Yeah, so I think, and what was really unusual about yesterday is it's a two-inning save. You know, I mean, he comes in and he pitches 8 and 9. I mean, that's
old school.
That rarely happens in today's baseball, and it rarely happens with this manager, that you have a guy pitches a shutout 8th, and then they bring him back out for the 9th. It doesn't happen, but, you know, he breezed through the 8th so easily.
Yeah, and non-stressful.
And his stuff was so good. I mean, he was throwing nothing but splitters. I mean, I don't know if he threw anything other than a splitter.
That's
in
not
the whole
that
two
uncommon
innings.
With him, but he can fall in love with it a little bit too much for my taste. But it was working.
Yeah,
so,
honestly, I don't know if he threw another single pitch. I mean, everything he threw was a splitter, but it was biting and it was good. And he got through at the 8th and the 9th with no problem whatsoever.
Yeah, and Jared Eich off today, and of course everything highlighted yesterday by the Bryce Harper home run in front of what was a great crowd yesterday, a ball that I think is still going. I'm not quite – it's past Center City at this point, right, where that ball was going. But it was pretty remarkable. But, yeah, Phillies and Rockies game 3, and we're coming to you live from the NovaCare broadcast booth. We also talked a lot about the Sixers and the Eagles. So in the 11 o'clock hour, Ray, and we got 2 hours of power today, so we got a lot to get to here.
Right.
You brought it up, and we're going to dive a little bit more into the Carson Wentz situation and whether or not – anything's going to go down. Should it go down? And you're a proponent. I talked to Howard yesterday, and Howard thinks that if anything happens, it will happen in the season, and you're a proponent of that as well.
Oh, so I didn't realize Howard had said that. Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel this thing trending. Howie's talked about it. And, look, they want to get something done. But I don't think Carson Wentz is worried about it. I don't think the Eagles are worried about it. The fans are talking about it, and we're talking about it. But I don't think anybody feels any great sense of urgency. Look, this organization, they know what this guy is. They know what kind of player he is. They understand fully the investment they made in him. They brought him in here to be the guy that was going to be their franchise. They brought him in here to be the guy that was going to be their Matt Ryan, their Tom Brady, their Peyton Manning, the guy they were going to build everything around. And they have done that. And so, you know, the rest of it is just the accounting and the paperwork. And it's going to get done. If I were to guess right now, I think it's going to be something that will probably be done within the season. And if... You know, I don't think it's anything to worry about now. I don't think it's anything to worry about through training camp. Let the season start. Let it play out. And if things go the way I think they're going to go, I think his team's going to be really good this year. And if it goes that way, I think by midseason, this thing is going to get done.
Words I want to hear from the Eagles' voluntary OTAs this week. I'll tell you what they are when we get back. 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. You can always tweet me at R. Ellis Sports, and you can tweet Ray Didinger at Ray. What's your handle on Twitter?
I'll come up with one before the end of the hour.
Oh, right. That's right. Okay. All right. So we're coming to you live from the NovaCare broadcast booth, Citizens Bank Park. Rob Ellis in for Glenn Mack now, along with Ray Didinger. WIP Sports time is 10:56.
And for years, we've celebrated the individual on a team whose effort and results consistently went beyond expectations. Well, I need to tell you about an experience that I've had with my car that illustrated the same qualities at United Tire and Service. I stopped into United Tire and Service for a quick oil change. Now, I'm sure you've seen their locations. They're all over the Delaware Valley. They have 13 of them. And the thing I really like is that each location is on-site owner-operated, so they get to know you and your car. Now, during my time at United, they performed a multi-point safety inspection free of charge. They informed me on some issues with my vehicle. They let me know what was urgent and what wasn't. And they did it in an educational way, not like they were trying to hard sell me. The whole staff at United Tire and Service could not have been more accommodating. Yes, United Tire sells and installs BF Goodrich, Michelin, and other well-known brands of tires, but they also do a lot more. They service all makes and models, everything from oil changes, brakes, transmission, complete engine diagnostics. As your car is in need of service, find the closest United Tire and Service location near you. Online at unitedtire.com. Tell them that Ray sent you. United Tire and Service. Don't drive alone. Drive United.
11 o'clock hour, coming to you live from the NovaCare broadcast booth, Citizens Bank Park. Rob Ellis in for Glenn Mack now, along with Ray Didinger. And this hour of the program is brought to you by United Tire. Don't drive alone. Drive United. Visit unitedtire.com. eagleslive.com. All right, Ray, so I promised you I would give you the words I want to hear this week at Eagles OTAs.
Okay.
I want to hear from either Carson or Howie or Doug. I don't really care who I hear it from, but I want to hear from one of those people or somebody else that Carson Wentz has been given full clearance to do any and every football activity. That's what I want to hear, because my hope was this entire offseason, Ray, would be dedicated to Carson simply being able to hone, improve,
right,
work on the finer points of his game rather than rehabbing an injury. That to me is sort of underplayed a little bit here. The fact that the last time we heard from Carson, there wasn't full clearance, not panic time or anything like that, but this thing should be healed by now, right? Because this occurred, what, week 13-ish, somewhere around there, 12? I guess maybe the injury occurred. We don't even know when exactly.
Exactly. We right. Yeah. You don't really know.
So
that was when it was reported, but when it occurred, you're still not sure.
We're now into late May, and as we were, you were just talking about this with our producer Kevin Keenan right here on site. You know, Memorial Day is this coming weekend.
Unbelievable.
So this needs to be good to go at this point.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about it. I think that to your point though. Offseason is vitally important for him. I think you saw 2 years ago when he was coming off his rookie year and he was healthy, he had a full offseason to just really work on his game, to just really work on quarterbacking. And that's why you saw that enormous leap from year one to year two, because he had that. Listen, this is a guy, I mean, he is a worker.
He's driven.
He is a grinder. This is not a guy, if he has an off season, it's not an off season. He's not playing games, but he's working every day on his game. And you saw when he came back that second year, I mean, he was so much better. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you really want, is you want that productive an off season for him coming into next year so that he can have the same kind of leap next year, that he can start off strong and stay that way through the whole season. That's really important. I know it alarmed people when they had the last camp and he just said, well, you know, I'm still healing up a little bit. I mean, alarm bells went off all over the city that, what are we dealing with here? I'm not really concerned about that. I think they're being real careful about it. I think he's being real careful about it, as they should be. But I think I'm not really worried about his physical condition. I mean, I know what you're saying. I would like for them to just give him a total green light starting this week and just let him go. I still think they're probably going to ease into it, but I don't think that in any way, shape, or form he's like behind anybody's schedule. I think he's on target to be ready for the start of training camp, and then through the summer, then just getting, it's all about getting ready for September.
All right, so I'm going to give you a little, we're going to stick with the football theme, Ray, but I just want to give you a little Phillies update here as we are at the NovaCare broadcast booth at Citizens Bank Park, awaiting the series finale between the Phillies and the Rockies. Phillies going for the sweep today. Phillies have activated Scott Kingery, and they've optioned Nick Williams back down to AAA.
Okay.
Wow, that's a for Nick Williams, right, has been up here and contributed to this team a little bit. That's not surprising. It's been a struggle for him. He was a good pinch hitter last year, Ray. He hasn't succeeded too much in that role this year, and hasn't gotten a whole lot of starts with the new outfield look that the Phillies have. But man, Kingery is activated. And I think you may see him push Michael Franco at third base in a real hard way.
Could be, because Franco, after a real hot start, has really struggled now for about the last 3 weeks.
Considerably cooled. Yeah.
And so that's, you know, Hernandez has come back and played well.
At the plate, he has.
Yeah.
He's been a butcher in the field.
Yeah. But he has got his batting average back up over 300.
Yeah.
So after getting off to a slow start, he's sort of come around offensively. So I don't think they're going to be taking him out. More likely, if Kingery's coming back and the hamstring is healed, I'd be willing to bet you that he's going to get his first reps at third base as opposed to second.
I would tend to agree. We'll give you the lineups a little bit later. But, yeah, I think that's going to be the case. So Scott Kingery activated, Nick Williams headed up the turnpike to Lehigh Valley.
Yeah. Well, Kingery was really hitting the ball.
That's
before
the shame
he got hurt.
Of it. That is the shame of it.
I mean, he was really coming around and looked really good at the plate. It looked like he was really gaining his confidence. And then he gets hurt, so you just hope he can kind of pick it up where he left off.
Yeah, certainly. A little bit later in the show, we're going to get into the bizarre Jets situation, Ray. And, and, and bizarre it is.
But you could do a whole show about them.
Yeah, and we, you know, usually you just revel and bathe in the dysfunction of the Jets, and it's great to look at from afar.
Mm-hmm.
But it may impact the Eagles, so we'll talk about the
correct
the connection that could have. But for right now, let's go to Drew and Fox Chase. Let's talk a little Carson Wentz. What's going on, Drew? You're on with Ray and Rob.
Yeah, how you guys doing? I'm going through a car wash right now. I hope you can hear me.
We hear you just fine.
All right.
Get the undercarriage, Drew.
Definitely the ultimate plus, John, the ultimate plus. But anyway, Carson Wentz, the two injuries, what do you think would be the hardest to sustain as a quarterback to not get hurt again, like the leg or the back? What would you be more worried about going into this season for Carson Wentz? Which injury would you be more worried about him sustaining?
It's an interesting question. I would probably – we're getting a lot of reverb there. Thanks, Drew. I appreciate it, man. Make sure that car is spiffy. All right, Ray. I used to work at a car wash.
Did you?
High school and college. I was the dryer.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, which is –
let me guess. This was somewhere on – this had to be somewhere like on either Baltimore Pike or Westchester Pike.
Westchester Pike. It was right next to where the Barnabys is right now on Westchester Pike. That car, there's a car wash still there, but it was called the White Glove back then. Yes.
How were the tips on the Westchester Pike?
Not good enough.
Not good?
For some of the stuff they had us doing. I mean, I'd be out there in, like, December, and my hands were like claws. They were so frozen, drying off with wet towels. But that's – I digress,
That's
Ray.
Neither here nor there.
It's not about me today.
Okay.
All right, Ray. I would say the back actually kind of worries me more. I know that sounds strange when you're coming off an ACL and an LCL and reconstructive knee surgery. But you just feel like when you're in the pocket and you're sacked or you go down you know, the back could tend to be contorted – in a lot of different ways where that could maybe be a little bit more troublesome. Neither's great, but I kind of tend to worry about the back a little
bit. Yeah, the thing with Carson is he's got a history of injury, and they're all different injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, he broke his wrist in college, cracks a rib his first preseason with the Eagles, then he hurts his knee, now it's his back. It's not like he has – it's not like a Joe Namath thing where he has just one chronically bad knee that's always going out on him. It's just a whole succession of things, and it has more to do about the way he plays than his body. When I watch Wentz play, and I think he's a terrific player. I really do. I really, really like him. But he just – every time he gets hit, it looks like he's – you wonder if he's going to get up. I mean, there's some guys – at every position, but particularly the quarterback position, to have a sixth sense of being able to protect themselves. And they'll take hits. But
Russell Wilson's a great example.
But they never take killer hits. Yeah. They never take the big hit that you wonder if he's going to get up from it. It seems like every time Carson gets hit, that's all he gets. And it's look, I understand a part of it is it's part of his competitiveness, that he's always going for the extra yard. He's always holding the ball for that extra second to try and get it down the field. But over the course of a season, it lends itself to too many big hits. And as big and strong as he is, this is the end result of it, is a whole series of injuries. And I think that when you talk about his physical condition and how critical he is to this team, to me the one big thing, the one big takeaway, it has nothing to do with the trainers, it has nothing to do with the doctors, it really has to do with him, that he just has to understand that, first and foremost, you got to get rid of the ball quicker. You just got to get rid of the ball quicker. And I know this coaching staff does stress that with him all the time. I know that's a, you know, get it out of your hand. If you either take the check down or throw it away, but just don't take the unnecessary hit. Yeah, running out of bounds is part of it. Sliding when you got the first down, that's part of it. That's all part of playing smart quarterback. But the biggest part of it is just in the pocket, just you got to get rid of the ball faster. And, you know, I think that's part of the reason why there are so many looks at Zach Ertz. You know, because he's always being told, get rid of it faster, get rid of it faster. Well, if that's what you're being told,
then you're not going to let the play develop as much down the field.
Yeah, you're just going to look for your tight end, especially if you got one that's as good as Zach Ertz. And I don't disagree with that philosophy, but I think that's something that he has to be super mindful of is, look, there's nothing wrong with taking the check down. There's nothing wrong with throwing the ball away. Just don't take those big hits over and over again, because we all know. I mean, this is a good roster. It's a good team. I mean, right now Las Vegas has them as the favorites to win the NFC East again. I would, too. But, you know, you're not going to get there with Cody Kessler. I mean, everything is riding on Carson Wentz this year more than ever. And he has to be they can build an offensive line to protect the quarterback, and that's part of it. But the quarterback has to protect the quarterback.
Yeah, like, it's one thing if some guy comes off the edge in a second and a half and just, you know, makes some insane athletic. Okay, what are you going to do? That happens. It's another thing that you're in the pocket 3-4 seconds and you're patting the ball, hoping somebody comes open or waiting to make a – no, that can't happen. And that's something you saw too much last year. I think Carson pressed in a big way last year, and I don't know. I think part of that was the knee wasn't healthy. Part of it was the back. There were a lot of things that factored into it, but part of it was, and he didn't have an offseason to hone his game like I talked about earlier, but part of it was he was pressing, and he wanted to make plays, and he wanted to help his team, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. He held on to the ball too long.
Way too long.
And it's okay to punt sometimes. It's okay to lose a down. It's certainly much more valuable to keep you than to get that extra play. So I think you're right. It's easy to say, hey, get out of bounds and slide and don't take on a linebacker, and I think he will be smart enough to do that, but it's got to be pocket presence and understanding what that's all about.
Sure. I mean, that's the biggest part of it. I mean, the running part of it, the protecting yourself when you run, the getting out of bounds, the sliding. Okay. I mean, that's easy enough to do. But how many of those do you have in a game?
Right.
Four, five, maybe. Mm-hmm. But you're in the pocket all the time. I mean, you're throwing the ball.
Doug's not afraid to throw.
Yeah, right. You're throwing the ball maybe 40 times a game. You may be running it five times a game. So the idea of protecting yourself, it's only partly about the sliding. The rest of it is awareness in the pocket and being able to understand that clock in your head, where it's set, and when that bell goes off, that ball's got to be gone. And I'm sure that Doug and all the other coaches, Mike Rowe, all these guys, are just going to work with him like crazy about, look, just get rid of the ball quicker. You're going to have good receivers. You got a lot of guys to choose from. There are going to be people open, but you just can't be standing there holding the football.
Exactly. Let's go to Dan on a cell. Dan wants to talk about Carson Wentz. Dan, you're on with Ray and Rob.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Hi, Dan.
Sorry, turn my radio off. I did. Actually, I lost my sophomore season in college to the exact same thing Carson Wentz has. And
which
it
one,
was,
with the back, back or knee? What are you referring
to? Yeah, it was, I had to wear,
Uh-oh.
Dan?
I don't know what happened to my phone.
Okay. All right, Dan, what do you specifically talk about, the back or the knee? You didn't specify.
The thing I would be more worried about, I am more worried about, is the back.
Okay.
Because the knee, you see it, they know how to fix it. They can do that in a season. And normally it's not a problem. But the back, especially playing quarterback with that torquing and twisting motion, what I had was I lost my sophomore season in college. So, I mean, I didn't play quarterback. But it just allows way more movement to those low back muscles than you should have. I have no idea what exactly Carson has, but I had one in the same area. And just long term, that would be what worries the hell out of me.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dan. Yeah. I didn't suffer the injury like you did, but I just think about the amount of hits, the way his body can get twisted, and you mentioned contorted. I talked about contorted. There's a lot of different ways that can go wrong with the back.
And I think you kind of saw it last year where some of his passes sailed or just there wasn't enough on it. I have zero idea if that was the cause of it, but knowing what the injury is and how it does affect you, I wouldn't put it past that could have been a part of it.
Yeah, he lacked touch, true. Ray. He lacked touch. And Dan, thanks, man. Appreciate the phone call. He lacked a touch last year, either whether it was deep balls, he missed a lot of high. There were some like wheel routes where a guy was open down the sideline where it just, you know, he just had to put enough loft
just missed
on
him.
And it wasn't there. And I don't know if that was rust or that was the back impacting it. I'm not sure, but that has to be better.
Yeah, it does. I really think when you look at the whole of last year for what he played, I don't know that he was ever healthy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he came back. I mean, he pushed as hard as he could to get back. He got back as early as he could. But, I mean, he was good enough to get on the field, but I don't think he was ever fully healthy. I mean, they talk about the kind of injury he had. I mean, his knee injury was a really bad injury, which had major surgery. And you hear a lot of doctors say it, that it's not just a one-year deal. It takes 2 years to come back from that. So, I mean, even at the point where he came back 3 weeks into the season, still, I don't think he was 100% when he came back on the field. He would even tell you that. And then he wasn't back on the field all that long before he hurt his back again. So I don't know that there was ever a game last season where he ever was 100%. What you're hoping is that with this offseason and a full rehab and a training camp, that he'll be ready and he'll be healthy to start this season, and then becomes the issue of then keeping him healthy for 16 weeks. He has to demonstrate that he can do that. There's no doubt about that. You know, 2 years in a row, he didn't finish the season. And if this team's going to try and go back and win another Super Bowl, that can't happen again.
And that's the thing, you know, as much as we talked about a little bit earlier with Chris Long, you know, calling it a career, that you're not thrilled maybe at their, you know, defensive end situation, and it's a little worrisome what's going to happen with the guard spot because you don't know when Brandon Brooks comes back from that Achilles, and I'm not in love with Isaac Samalo, whatever. I mean, there are things that we can certainly nitpick about this team.
But although I thought the re-signing of Wisniewski was a good move.
I agree, and that was underplayed this week, and I was very happy to see that as well.
I was. I mean, when it looked like he was not going to be back, I worried about that because I share your thoughts about Samalo. I know the coaches like him, and they feel like he's a big, strong guy who can get better. But right now, you know, Wisniewski is a solid pro, and if Brooks isn't ready to start the season, now he says he will be. I honestly don't know how he can.
It's pretty late in the year that
it really is. I mean, it's at the very end of the year. It's the last game of the season, and it was a bad injury.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you're pushing it to think he's going to be back week one. But, okay, if it's not till week five, at least with Wisniewski, you have a guy. I mean, you can get four or five good games out of him. Mm-hmm. So I think bringing him back. I mean, it didn't get a lot of publicity or a lot of conversation here, but I thought that was a really, really good sign.
Agreed. I was sad to see him go as well. But so the point is, you know, even though there's a couple of question marks certainly floating around, you appear to be loaded offensively with weapons. You still have, you know, a defense with a lot of strong players on that side of the ball as well, and some of the signings they made in the offseason, et cetera, and Zach Brown. My point is, with the coaching staff, with the front office, you're set up to be in a really good place this year going into the season.
I think so.
But, I mean, everything is about Carson Wentz and his health. He's gotten through 1 year, and I'm a huge Carson Wentz fan.
Sure.
But he's gotten through 1 season in his career. Now, mind you, it's only 3 years, but whatever. He's only gotten through 1 year, and his senior year of college, he was hurt as well.
Yeah.
I mean, to call him an X factor is stating the obvious here, but so much of this comes down to not having the ability to just, okay, if he goes down, Nick Foles is going to save the day. That's gone now. That safety blanket is out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, everything is so set up so nicely, but it's tough when there are things you can't control. And injuries like that are so out of your control if you're the Eagles, for
no
sure.
No doubt. I thought that you and I really haven't had a chance to discuss the Eagles draft. I thought it was good. I really did. I thought, you know, to me, when you're talking about the draft, it's a three-day event. And I think you really kind of win or lose the draft in the first 2 days. It's those first three rounds that kind of dictate. And kind of whatever you get on the third day in terms of those fourth, fifth, sixth rounders, that's like a bonus.
No doubt.
If you find a Jason Kelce somewhere on the third day, that's a bonus. If you find a Harold Carmichael in the seventh round, that's a bigger bonus. But really, your draft, you win it or lose it in days one and two. And I thought the Eagles really hit it in days one and two.
One and two were strong.
Yeah, I think Dillard, I was amazed that he fell the way he fell for as good a player as he is. But when the Eagles saw the opportunity to jump up and grab him and get ahead of Houston, who was going to take him.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no question.
Absolutely.
There's no question the Houston Texans were going to take him. And the Eagles give Howie Roseman credit. I mean, he was very nimble. He saw the player there. He said, let's just jump up ahead of Houston. They did. I guarantee the people in Houston were furious about it, but that's their fault. They thought they could sit there and get him at their spot, 24. But the Eagles go up and they get Dillard, who's going to be a really good player. I don't know when you're going to need him. I mean, if you get another season out of Jason Peters, great. You know, then Dillard has a year to learn. But if you need him to play this year, I think he's going to be ready for it. I think Sanders is a real good player. I think Sanders is going to play a lot, and I think he's going to contribute a lot. And the kid from Stanford, who a lot of people don't know much about, has an awful lot of ability and very unusual size-speed ratio that I think he's going to play a lot, and I think he's going to contribute too. So you factor all that in with the addition of DeSean Jackson coming back. I think the point that you made just a moment ago about the offensive weaponry that they're putting around Carson Wentz, it's impressive.
Yeah, it is. All right, so quick update here, and we'll get to an update for you and then come back with your phone calls. 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. According to John Clark of NBC Sports Philadelphia, Scott Kingery, Ray?
Yes.
Starting today?
Mm-hmm.
Playing center field.
Oh, really?
He will get the nod over Odubel in center field today. So Kingery in the lineup and will be playing center field. We'll give you the lineups a little bit later, but interesting.
That is interesting.
Very interesting. All right, much more on the Phillies. Of course, the Eagles, Carson Wentz, Chris Long retiring, Sixers. It's all in the mix. We'll touch on that Jets possible tie-in to the Eagles when we get back as well. 888-729-9494, #9494. on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Beautiful day at the ballpark. We're live at the NovaCare broadcast booth. I'm Rob Ellis in for Glenn Macnow along with Ray Didinger. WIP Sports time is 11:22. 11:30, we're back, everybody. Rob Ellis in for Glenn Macnow today. Ray Didinger on this beautiful Sunday morning. We are at Citizens Bank Park, specifically the NovaCare broadcast booth. All right, Ray, so we'll go right back to the phones in 1 second, but I did want to mention this today. You know, in the under the headline of the bizarre gets even more bizarre in New York with the Jets. So they end up firing their general manager. And basically, at least for right now on an interim basis, giving all power to Adam Gase. Now, let's review Adam Gase, his tenure in Miami. At best, I think you could say they were mediocre, but really not even. I would categorize his time there as even a notch below mediocre.
Had a successful first season and then tailed off very quickly.
In a big way. He's been with the Jets for about 5 minutes. You hold a draft. You fire your GM, McKagan. He's gone. He's out reportedly because there were conflicts with Adam Gase, who's just gotten there. Gase didn't want to sign Bell, reportedly. Wasn't happy with his input in the draft. Yet you let this guy draft, if you're Woody Johnson, you let him make the draft. Then you fire him a couple of weeks later. Turn it over to Adam Gase, who didn't have a success in his first tenure as a head coach. Now he's got head coach and GM responsibilities and power. He ends up trading a high pick of yours a couple of years ago for you know, a bag of balls.
Yeah.
What am I missing here? What did Adam Gase ever do to get anywhere near this kind of power? And what the hell are they doing in New York?
They don't know. I mean, it's so obvious. It's painfully obvious. I'll tell you, the happiest person on the face of the earth right now about what's happened with the Jets this week is Dave Gettleman, the general manager of the Giants.
Oh, he's away from the fire
for a minute.
Because
now people have stopped talking about him and the drafting of Daniel Jones and all everything that went down with the Giants around draft time when everybody was killing Gettleman for that. Well, now the Jets and Christopher Johnson, the guy who's the acting owner, now that Woody Johnson, who's their brother, the real owner, is off as our ambassador to Great Britain. Again, another bizarre aspect
Gettleman
of this whole
like
thing.
Gettleman looks like Ozzie Newsome compared to what's happening with the Jets.
It's, you know, how you do what they did, which is you go into this offseason with like $120 million of money to spend. You let the general manager go spend it. You let him run the draft. Let him hire the coach. And then 2 weeks after the draft, you fire the general manager and let the newly hired coach basically become now the general manager when he's been on the job all of about 20 minutes. It, you know, there's a reason why certain teams just stay on the same wrong road forever. And that's what it is. It's not bad luck. It's bad management. It's lack of foresight. It's bad decision making. And that's really why the Jets are the Jets right now. And I don't get it. There were a lot of, and it looks even worse when you look at it in context, because there were reports a week ago that there was a real issue between Gase and McKagan, that they weren't getting along philosophically, they didn't agree on a lot of stuff, that there were some real internal issues. And Gase had a press conference where he came out and ripped the press, saying, you know, all you guys write is a bunch of crap, there's no truth in anything.
Yeah.
And then less than a week later, the general manager gets fired. So, I mean, it's wrong in every possible way that it could be wrong. And so normally we'd just be sitting back just laughing at the Jets, being the Jets.
But there's a little more to it.
But now there's another element here that impacts the Eagles, which is, okay, the Jets are going to go out now, and they are going to hire a general manager. And it's commonly, it's conventional wisdom around the NFL that the number one guy that they are targeting and the guy that they really want to hire is Joe Douglas, who is vice president of player personnel with the Eagles. So for all of these follies that are going on up in New York, there could be some collateral damage here that if the Eagles wind up losing Joe Douglas.
Yeah, and not only because the Eagles have had success with Joe and Andy, you know, Weidel and Howie, obviously, that grouping, but Adam Gase and Douglas worked together in Chicago for that really short stint when Joe was there.
Right.
And Gase was the offensive coordinator. So Just to put two and two together, there is a little bit more smoke to this fire that they could potentially have. But here's the question I have for you, Ray. Knowing how precious few of these jobs there are,
right?
General manager in the NFL, okay? Mm-hmm. Knowing also everything we just talked about, the sheer dysfunction in New York.
Right.
If you're Joe Douglas and you have this opportunity, do you view it and say, look, there will be another one? As much as I'm tempted, I know I'm going into a bad spot here. Or do you say to yourself, hey, man, I don't know if this opportunity is going to come again. I got to jump on this when I can jump on it.
Correct.
What do you do if you're Joe?
There's been a lot of talk about that. In fact, I think the Inquirer just the other day, Mike Sielski wrote a piece where he basically said, if you're Joe Douglas, don't do this.
Right.
Even if they offer you the job, don't do this. And I think in the same day's paper, Jeff McClain wrote a piece about, why Douglas probably would do it.
Yeah.
So there are two very valid sides to this discussion. It's the biggest job you got. I mean, there are only 32 of them, or 32 teams, and there's only one guy that's going to be the general manager for each of those teams. If you're a football lifer, which Joe Douglas is, you've always aspired to exactly this. And you can always say, oh, there'll be another opportunity. Well, you don't know that. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe there will, but you don't know that. And the Jets put it in front of you. I think it's hard to say no. Even though you recognize that you're stepping into a largely dysfunctional situation. One thing you got going for you is you got a quarterback. One thing that McKagan did for you is he left you a quarterback. And almost anybody that looks, whether you're a coach or whether you're a general manager, if some team is offering you a job, the first place you look is you look at the quarterback position and you ask, do we have a quarterback? Because if we don't have a quarterback, we really don't have much of a chance to win. If I have a quarterback, I got a shot. So now I don't know what Joe Douglas thinks of Sam Darnold. I don't know if he really liked him or not, but I think the chances are pretty good that he liked him. He's a young guy with a lot of promise. I could see Douglas looking at that and saying, you know what? Got a good young quarterback here. We got Le'Veon Bell. We got C.J. Mosley. We got Quinnen Williams, who I think might have been the best overall player in this draft.
He's a stud.
He really is. I mean, we got some pretty decent personnel here. We got a lot of issues we need to clean up and work out, but we got some pieces to work with. If the offer is made and he's really the guy that they come to and offer the job, and I think he will be, if I'm Douglas, I think it's hard to turn down.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you almost feel like it's only a matter of time with Joe Douglas before he's gone, but it looked like you had staved off another year, and now that's not the case.
Yeah, exactly, because I really thought, as well-regarded as Joe is around the league, I really thought after the Eagles won the Super Bowl, coming right off the Super Bowl, that was the logical time that somebody would come in and just pluck him right out of the Eagles front office. When that didn't happen, I thought, whoa, the Eagles kind of dodged a bullet here. Because I really thought that Joe was going to be on a lot of people's lists. Well, it didn't happen last year, but okay, I think it's going to happen now. And if it does, look, Joe may look at the situation and say, you know what, no, I don't want any parts of that. New York, the situation's a mess. The owner's in England. His brother's running the team. I know Adam Gase, but I'm not so sure he's a great coach. Do I really want to hitch my wagon to this? Yeah, you know what? I'll stay in Philadelphia where I think we have another chance to win another Super Bowl. Maybe that is how he thinks. I just think for a guy who's really in this business, that to be offered a job as a GM of one of these teams, it's tough to say no.
Yeah.
It's tough to say no.
Because it's a very strange business in that you're hot today, you're freezing cold tomorrow, and it things can change very quickly. Like, I'll give you an example. You're coming off a Super Bowl, and there was a lot of injuries that occurred last year to this Eagles team, and it was real close where they're even going to get in the playoffs, right?
Sure.
That just shows you how things can change. And God forbid, knock on wood, hope it doesn't happen. You could have a boatload of injuries this year, and all of a sudden Eagles finish at 6-10, and nobody's knocking on your door.
Right.
So when opportunity knocks, you got to jump at it sometimes, and it is going to be a tough call for sure. I wouldn't fault them one bit, even though there is a high level of dysfunction there. I wouldn't fault them one bit for taking it. I hope that's not the way it works out, and maybe he'll say, hey, look, I got to be patient with this. I'm still a relatively young man, etc. I'm going to get my chances, and good for him if he does that, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit if he jumped at it.
Yeah, and if he were to leave, it would be a loss. I mean, it would be a loss because I think he's one of the better talent evaluators out there. He's a really good – he's a scout in the classic sense of a scout. He's a guy that I mean, he understands analytics, but he's really about a guy that goes out and watches practices and just watches players and studies tape and just breaks down who can play this game.
Right.
I'm not going to worry about their 40s. I'm not going to worry about their vertical leap. Yeah, I'll look at those numbers, but let me look at the tape and see who can play. And Joe's really good at finding players who can play. So that's why he's been a desirable guy around the league for a while. And if he leaves, it's been a really good partnership, he and Howie.
Excellent.
Because he helps identify the players. He helps build the draft board. He helps run the draft. You know, and Howie handles the money, and he handles the salary cap and does it brilliantly. Mm-hmm. And the two of them have worked together very seamlessly. That's part of the reason why the Eagles are where they are right now. And if you lose part of that equation, it's not going to be easy to replace.
888-729-9494. We'll get a quick timeout here. We'll come back. We will get your phone calls in. Rob Ellis in for Glenn Mack now, along with Ray Dinger with the NovaCare broadcast booth. Coming up, we'll have leading off, get you set for the Phillies. Scott Kingery in the lineup in center field. We'll give you the full lineups for the game during leading off. But looks like it's going to be a fun day for baseball. And we'll come right back with your phone calls. Rob and Ray, WIP Sports Time is 11:41. Man, time flies when you're having fun. Final segment of the show. Ray departing at 12. I got you for leading off. But welcome back, everybody. Rob Ellis in for Glenn Mack now, along with Ray Dinger with the NovaCare broadcast booth here at Citizens Bank Park. Phillies and Rockies 105 start right here on 94 WIP. Phillies going for the sweep, Ray.
Yep.
Sweep, sweep. Yes, they are going for the sweep over the Rockies today. Let's go back to the phones and bring up Tom in Baltimore. Wants to talk a little Carson Wentz. What's going on, Tom? You're on with Rob and Ray.
It's Austin, actually.
Oh, hey, Austin. I got you.
Hey, calling, going to the Phillies game today with my son, but I had an Eagles question.
Sure.
All right. If Carson and I think the guys have built a great team, if they... You know, if Carson is the focal point, as you said, then, you know, did you think the Eagles would bring in a veteran backup, or do you think they would roll with Nate Sudfeld?
I think what you see is what you get right now. I mean, they brought in Cody Kessler, who I guess would fit that veteran backup role, but it's in all likelihood, it's going to be those two guys backing up, Sudfeld and Kessler.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be anybody else. I mean, they brought in Kessler to compete with Nate. I mean, the coaches here, they really like Sudfeld. I mean, he hasn't played a lot. But he played during the last preseason. And the coaches, I think, really do feel that he's a capable backup. I mean, he's not Nick, but I think they feel that he's a capable backup. But they wanted to give him some competition. So they brought Kessler in to compete with him. And then Thorson is the rookie they drafted who they're going to try and develop. But I think it's going to be competition between Sudfeld and Kessler for that number two spot. But as far as bringing in another quarterback, no, I don't foresee that.
Okay. I think Sudfeld has shown, you know, what we've seen. He's been very, very good. But, you know, just when the team is so good, it all hinges on Carson. And we obviously know Nate, you know, Nick's down in Florida. So, you know, I hope Nate can get it done.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, Austin. And thanks, man. Enjoy the game today with your son. Where are these good backups? I must have missed it. That's why I keep referencing, like, Nick Foles was such the exception. Generally, Ray, you lose your one, it's over.
Right.
For any kind of extended period of time. There just aren't those kind of guys out there. I mean, think about the league, right? If you exclude Nick Foles, can you name two, three that you really would feel confident could go in there and win you a playoff game or win you five, six games? I can't.
No, probably not.
The drop-off from ones to twos in that league is steep.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, at every position, one of the byproducts of the salary cap is that it's drained all the depth from the NFL. I mean, there used to be a time before the salary cap where teams would – where you could carry, particularly on the offensive line, where you could carry a couple of veteran offensive linemen who were starters, but they weren't starters anymore. But, you know, they were good backups, could play a couple different positions, and if somebody got hurt and you needed them to play two or three games, they could step in, they knew the offense, and they could perform. The Redskins did that for years.
Right.
But with the salary cap, you just can't do that now. So if you lose a starter, you're winding up having to take a guy off the bottom third of your roster. Chances are he's a low draft pick or an unsigned rookie free agent. And he steps right in, and the drop-off from the starter to the backup is crippling. There is no depth in the league right now, but I think it's most evident at the quarterback position. You go from your starting quarterback to your backup, you have very little chance to win.
Let's go to Tom in South Jersey with Sox and Baseball. What's going on, Tom?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, first let me say I'm very happy Kingery's back. I think he's going to be a good player.
Yeah, folks just tuning in, he's in the starting lineup today. He was activated. He'll be playing center field.
That's great, yeah. And my question is, I'm just listening to your response. I'm really getting tired of seeing balls called strikes when they're 6 inches outside the strike zone. And I'm wondering if you think we can ever get to electronic balls and strikes. And I'll listen to the answer on
the radio. Okay. All right, Tom. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Ray, I've always been one in favor of the human element. I know it can be frustrating sometimes when it goes against your team. I get it. I don't want a game officiated or umpired by robots.
No.
I don't. You know, I get it. I don't need to see Joe West blow another call either. But, I mean, I prefer there were still umpires.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I'm not I know we've got a lot of call for the electronic balls and strikes. I'm not in favor of it. I get frustrated by the umpire strike zones too, but I'm still trying to wrap my head around replay in every sport now. I don't want to expand it beyond what it already is.
I got you. Let's go to Dre in South Philly. Let's talk a little Sixers and Phils. What's up, Dre?
Hey,
Dre. I don't know what happened there. Let's go to Charles. It seemed like there was a lot going on there.
Sounded
I'm not really
like
sure
it.
Exactly what it was. Let's go to Charles in Ben Salem. Charles, you're on 94 WIP with Ray and Rob. Hey, Charles.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good, Charles.
Good. How are Ray, you?
Okay, Ray, my question, okay, is basically a two-parter. Number one, okay, how do you grade the Eagles draft?
I gave him an A. Okay. I gave him an A-.
I give him an A-, too. I agree with you there. Okay, I like what they did with Andre Dillard, getting him and Miles Sanders. Now, my second question, okay, is I also liked, okay, what the Redskins did, in drafting Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State. I think they're going to be the most improved team. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Improved team in the division?
Yes, in the division.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with that. I thought that the Redskins draft was very good. A lot depends on what you think of Haskins, and I happen to like him.
I'm a Haskins fan.
Haskins a lot. I've seen him in a higher state.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem with him is it was 1 year, so he doesn't have a whole lot of experience, but I think he's got an awful lot of talent. And I thought the Redskins draft was one of the better drafts, actually. I mean, I gave them the same grade I gave the Eagles, and I gave the Eagles a high grade. I thought they both drafted better than either the Giants or the Cowboys.
I agree with you there. Okay, guys, thank you for your time.
I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
The problem that you have, this is a good thing if you're the Eagles, but the problem that you have if you're these other teams that we're talking about, you're still managed by Daniel Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Washington, and even with a good draft, he'll figure out a way to screw it up. You're still run by Jerry Jones. If you're the Cowboys, and he's never going to get rid of Jason Garrett, and that's always going to be, you know, an issue down there. So you love that too, right?
Right.
It appears from a Giants standpoint, as much as maybe the Jets have taken some of that, you know, deflected some of the heat, Gettleman's clueless. So, I mean, it's beautiful if you're the Eagles. Everything that's surrounding you and you're in your little neighborhood in the NFC East.
If you're the Eagles, you're sitting in a pretty good spot. You really are. I mean, that's why Vegas has them as the favorite right now, but to the caller's point, the Redskins draft is a good draft. I mean, I like Haskins, as you do. They got Montez Sweat, who's looks like a very formidable pass rusher, a guy that I think is going to come in and play right away, and I think he's going to play well. And they also got a little bit of the sleeper in their draft, and this is going to come back to the medical, but they got Bryce Love on day three.
Out of Stanford.
Who's the running back who almost won the Heisman Trophy 2 years ago and had a tremendous season at Stanford 2 years ago. Could have come out in the draft last year. And been a very high draft pick, but said, no, I'm going to stay in school. I'm in Stanford. He was a pre-med student.
No, he's a great student, and I can appreciate the fact that he wants to
and so he wanted to finish.
Stuff,
he wanted to finish up, so he came back and played his senior year, suffered a really bad knee injury, and now there's the medical issue about, well, is he going to come back from that? But, you know, in the third day of the draft, not a bad shot. I mean, he's sitting on the board. Why not? Why not take a chance with him? And if he comes back and he's healthy and he's anything close to what he was his junior year at Stanford, you got yourself a fine.
And you have P. Ryan, who's coming off an injury too, and you're going to try to milk another year out of Adrian Peterson,
right?
If you're the Redskins, so,
right?
Yeah.
And they also drafted Terry McLaurin, who was Haskins' favorite receiver at Ohio State. So he's going to come in with them, so there'll be some familiarity between those guys. That's why, I mean, I thought the Redskins had a straight-up A draft. I thought they were really good. Now, how that's all going to come together in Washington, things have a way of unraveling there. But I think right now, I would say they're the best of the other teams in the East behind the Eagles.
All right, what's on the docket for the Diddy today? What are we doing today, Ray?
I'm not sure. I'm going to go home and
load up on some Game of Thrones. And
no, Game of Thrones is not going to be part of my. That's not on my radar today.
Okay,
going to go home, meet the wife, get the dog, and probably head to Rittenhouse Square, find a nice bench, and sit there and enjoy the sunshine.
That's a good way to go.
There you go.
That's a good Sunday. Ray, it was a pleasure as always. We hope, obviously, Glenn is on the mend from what we're hearing. Good things, maybe back next week.
He's hoping to be back next weekend.
So hopefully Glenn will be back, but it was a lot of fun sitting in and getting to hang with you. It's always a pleasure. So
same here. Enjoy it.
Well, I'm not going anywhere. Ray's going to the park bench. I'm staying right here in the NovaCare broadcast booth. All right, so we got leading off coming up. We're going to get you set. So you want to stay tuned. We got a little twist to this lineup today, if you haven't heard yet. So a little move made by the Phillies. Phillies going for the sweep over the Rockies. So we'll get you set for Phillies-Rockies game 3 of this series. I am Rob Ellis. We'll get a quick stop at here. We'll come back with leading off. WIP Sports time is 11:58.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.